I've always been interested in coding and computers because I felt like it was kind of magic. And it was like magical that I could create a website and everyone in the world could view it. I watched, I'd say, a good 30, 40 YouTube videos just on how to make a website, HTML, how to make a website for WordPress, how to make a website for Shopify. I use computers to accelerate my learning.
Welcome to Future Titans, where we spotlight remarkable middle and high school entrepreneurs building real businesses that solve real problems. Every founder we speak to has received a $1,000 Formidable Fellowship grant. It's not equity, it's not debt, just a bit of inspiration capital to say keep doing what you're doing. If you're a student entrepreneur, we'd love to support you too. Just visit formidablefellowship.org to apply for a grant. It takes less than 5 minutes. And if you believe in empowering young builders, consider supporting our mission. All contributions are tax deductible. Now on to the conversation. Welcome to Future Titans, where we spotlight remarkable young entrepreneurs. I'm excited today to introduce Winston, who's built a remarkable business while still in school. Winston, before we get started, maybe introduce yourself, where you go to school, how old you are, what grade you're in, and then we'll jump in.
Sure. First of all, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. And my name is Winston Iskandar. I'm 18 years old. I'm from Los Angeles, California, and I go to Miracosta High School.
So, Winston, tell us about the business that you've built.
Yeah. So the business I've built is called Blox Media. Last year, it's done over $50,000 in revenue, and we sell anything from websites to doing SEO marketing and helping with e-commerce shops.
Okay, awesome. And you started this during the pandemic, I believe. So was this an outgrowth of like the challenge of getting a job during the pandemic?
Absolutely. During the pandemic, everything shut down, all these local shops shut down. And I wanted to work in an ice cream shop because I could eat some ice cream during my break. But unfortunately, that shut down as well. So my only choice was to try and go online, see if I can sell or make money online. So first, I realized my problem of finding a job was actually an opportunity, right? So I realized all these brick and mortar shops where people had to go and buy their products in person were no longer generating any revenue because they had shut down. So I came to the first shop and I said, hey, if I make a website for you, which I will do completely free, because first of all, this is my first time ever doing it, and I wanted to test the water, see if I can really bring value. And at the end of the day, I actually don't want the money. I want the first testimonial, which is way more important than getting your first couple hundred dollars, because that sets you up in the long run and gets you that credit, that validity for all other stores and companies, right? So I went to my first shop and I said, hey, I can make you an e-commerce site. I can transform your brick and mortar site into an e-commerce site on Shopify, and I'll set that up free of charge and we'll see how it works. But I reminded them that this has the potential to bring extra cash flow, and that's what every business valued a lot, the cash flow. So I went up to them, I made the website, and immediately saw sales. So hundreds of dollars came in at first, but had no marketing experience, no SEO experience. I just made a very simple, easy, specific site name, and it started getting clicks. So that was my first big revelation, because I realized making such a simple website with, you need to make a catchy hook, or you need to make a good front page with design. However, it was so simple compared to putting in all these hours. Let's say if I was an ice cream worker, putting all those hours versus just learning some code and setting it up brought me this big cash flow for a business, and they really, really appreciated it, because during the pandemic, they were unable to do that. So that was my first time seeing how much value websites and online presence can make in a business, right? So yeah, from there, it started to snowball. I started charging more and more, finding more clients, and then the word of mouth spread. I continued targeting mom and pop shops and brick and mortar shops because I knew that was where they needed the most help and where they could bring a lot of value.
Okay, cool. No, that's great. There's a lot of lessons in there. So I'm curious, what made you go and offer that free one the first time? And then did you get the first company or business you went to was a taker? Or did you have to kind of go pitch yourself for on a free website to multiple businesses?
Yeah. So the first ever business or sorry, the first ever client I took was one that I had to mass email, and I had to send, I'd say, a good 45 to 50 emails until I got a hit, because number one, I was a young kid and many people were skeptical, but the person who took a chance on me was a father. So he kind of understood the grind as having kids who are trying to make money. So he took a chance, which I'm forever grateful for. And he basically said, hey, I'll make me a website. And my offer to him was actually not for a price, because I saw the value as very early on in testimonials, because every time I'd see an agency online or web developers online, I would see them having these reviews, these ratings from past customers, and that just makes them so much more popular, so much more trustworthy, and it really legitimizes their business. So I saw my goal early on was to get as many testimonials as I could, so that in the long run, I could start going up to these big name companies, these big brands, and get their trust. So initially I offered him, hey, I can make you a website, just for a quick testimonial on my website. And yeah, that'll be it. And hopefully I can provide some value to you. And
Cool. And what was that first business? What did they do?
Yeah, they sold books. So they were selling, it was like a little bookstore. During the pandemic, clients obviously could not come into the shop. And yeah, they could probably sell on Amazon and things like that. But making their own front, actually, that idea was something that hadn't crossed his mind, because he was not tech savvy. He didn't really understand the Shopify game. So having added a e-commerce like storefront gave him an advantage over his competitor.
Okay. And so how did you teach yourself Shopify and just web dev? Was that something you learned in school? You picked it up on YouTube? Like, where did that knowledge come from?
Yeah. Well, I've always been interested in coding and computers, because I felt like it was kind of magic, and it was like magical that I could create a website and everyone in the world could view it, right? So I think that was when it started. And of course, I watched, I'd say, a good 30, 40 YouTube videos just on how to make a website, HTML, how to make a website for WordPress, how to make a website for Shopify. And I just used the tool to make me money, or I used computers to just accelerate, or I used computers to accelerate my learning, right? Or my learning. And it taught me how valuable computers were, especially since coding back in the day was much, coding back in the day was a unique and was a niche skill that many people didn't have.
Got it. All right. So you get your first customer, you get the testimonial, and I think there's a lot of insight there in terms of, even though it's like it's something of non-financial value that you can then take, and you went to other customers. So what's the process now to get, you know, customers two through however many you have, maybe a few hundred at this point? What are you doing to get customers now?
Yep. At this point, majority actually comes from referrals, word of mouth, and people I've worked with before. For example, I had one designer or one client in particular who actually, after completing her project, referred me to her a friend that was a designer. So we we actually worked with the designer friend, and because we're developers, we actually worked on a several projects together. So that's like, for example, an instance where one client led to like 7, 8, right? And from now, or currently, we're doing, we're trying to expand even further through marketing and ads on Facebook and Google.
Okay, cool. And so what does pricing look like? And I'm always curious, like, what did pricing look like in the beginning? Because a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, I made mistakes in pricing in the beginning, and then I learned like what not to do. So I'm curious, what did pricing look like in the beginning? You know, when you started charging for that second, third, and fourth customer, how were you thinking about pricing back then?
Yeah, I really, my biggest goal in giving quotes was to make it so that I was always charging by project and never by hour, because I felt that by project, I could easily tell the value that I'm trying to bring. And it would be very simple for the client to understand. If I charged him, let's say $3,000 for a website, but he gained $10,000 a month or in that 1 month of revenue, it would make sense to him because he would see, okay, it's an investment and he's getting way more return. So I always charge on project to make it very clear to the customer what value I'm adding. And it's so my first couple of clients that I started charging, I actually failed miserably. But it was really good learning. It was a really good learning lesson. So my first client that I charged was a full website design. So this is something where right now I'd be charging anywhere from 5,000 to 15,000, right? So I charged $850 only. And it was one of the biggest quoting mistakes, or I could say quoting lessons, you could say, in the history books, right? So I charged $850 for a full website, including the design, where I had to outsource the designer and pay them as well. So I ended up spending, I'd say, a good 3 weeks and counting, because the client was actually an interior designer for houses. And she was extremely specific on every little detail, every little font, the spacing, the margins, and she wanted to be perfect, which I completely understand. But before, I had no charges for extra revisions. I had no charges, additional charges for if it went over time or over schedule, or she started adding other requirements. So that project taught me a lot of lessons regarding how to charge, especially when dealing with a client who's super specific and needs super, has many specific requirements.
Okay, got it. And so now your pricing, you said 5 to 15,000 for something like that, and something like change orders, like you get a certain number of revisions included, and over that, you start to get into extra fees or something like that. Is that how pricing works today?
Absolutely. It starts off with a starting cost, and then we have additional revisions, and we make sure that the design is approved beforehand, before we get started.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And so how many customers now do you have? And is it all upfront fees that you charge, or are they paying you for ongoing hosting and other things over time? Or is it like sort of one and done, and then you turn the keys over to them and they manage it from there?
Yeah. So we always start off with trying to fix whatever issues or needs that they want. So if they want a new website, if they need fixes on their site, we always fix that first. And then once we do that, we always send a follow-up email, and we always try to convert them into monthly customers, because most of them don't have hosting plans, which are way more expensive than they need to be. And as we have custom hosting servers, we can reduce their prices while also gaining a monthly subscription. So every project we try at the end, either to offer hosting services, maintenance services, or even marketing.
Okay, got it. All right. So you take the services piece, then you're trying to turn them into a subscription, which is the gift that keeps giving, which is tremendous. So, so 50K last year, how many sort of customers is that? And then what's the growth plan for this year? What are you hoping to get to?
Yeah, it was around 200 to 300 customers last year. And next year, we're hoping to hit 125,000.
Okay, amazing. So what do you think are the levers to get to 125,000? Is it doing more of the same and getting more customers? Is it adding new products and services? Like, how are you thinking about that?
Sure. I think based on where we're at, we've really maximized and we've really tried to maximize the website business, because we've done marketing, we've done ads, we've kind of scaled that, and we're kind of hitting a threshold in the website business. However, recently we've expanded to an agency. So instead of just doing website businesses, we're planning to do, or we are doing, marketing, and we're expanding to app development. So I think to hit that 125 goal, I think app development will become a really big thing, especially since nowadays AI apps are coming around and all these new apps, everyone's on their phone now. So apps are now a really, really big thing, along with marketing. I think that will stay for the next years because it's so important and it's directly correlated to revenue boosting and cash flow. So yeah, we'll be aiming to hit marketing and really grow our app development section to hit that 125 margin.
All right. So Winston, you've got this, you know, you got app development, you got marketing, right? You got a lot of customers now. So, and you said we a couple times. So walk us through what we is. Do you have full-time or part-time employees or a bunch of freelancers? Yeah. What does that look like?
Sure. I initially started alone because I think I had to learn the ins and outs before hiring or before getting other team members to help. But now that we're such a big scale, I'm unable to physically go through every single project and fill out all the requirements alone. So for website projects or things like that, I outsource to developers on Fiverr, developers on Upwork. I've hired my cousin, for example, and especially going into the marketing and app development side, my goal is not to immediately start hiring, but I want to go through the first five or so clients and do it myself, because I think it's very important to get that experience and to understand the ins and outs before hiring.
Okay. And then, so you mentioned, you know, Upwork and Fiverr. How do you, I think for, you know, a lot of our entrepreneurs from Formidable Fellowship, like, you know, they'd love to use that even just to kind of get some work done for their businesses. I'm curious, like, how do you assess people who are good or bad on Fiverr? Do you just use their rating system? Do you get referrals from other people that say, hey, this person's good? Like, how are you finding the right people? Or have you just, you know, have you had some bad people also that you've had to deal with?
Yeah, I think the first thing I look at is the reviews and the ratings, because as I said, the testimonials, it speaks very importantly on their character, their work ethic, and how many successful projects they've gone through in the past, so their experience, right? And I think finding them is sometimes a bit tricky, but I found that always trying to get the cheapest person or always trying to go for the cheapest person sometimes is not the best strategy, because you end up trying to get people who skate by or barely meet their requirements versus someone who's very technically skilled, who will do over, who will overachieve and over deliver. So I found that by searching in the medium price range to even paying extra for a higher quality service, for example, Fiverr Pro, I think it's led to better results and I've found better people. And usually once I found someone good, I hope to maintain a long relationship with them because I know they're trustworthy, and it's kind of difficult finding other trustworthy people.
Okay, got it. All right. So there's definitely like a correlation between price and quality is what you found, I guess, to some degree. And any sense for like what countries these folks are from?
Yeah. They're mostly in third world countries. I'm from Indonesia, so I found some developers in Indonesia, but also from like Pakistan, Uzbekistan, You got some Ukraine, you've got Russia, a lot of diverse people, but it's really more of capitalizing on like the arbitrage between the U.S. and then the third world countries.
Okay, got it. Yeah, makes sense. And so I want to go back to something you said early on, which is, and maybe this was in our pre-interview, you talked about like the idea of getting a job versus starting a business and why starting a business was so much more appealing when you sort of thought about it. I think it was really enlightening. I'd love you to walk through kind of how you think about being an entrepreneur and why you get sort of so much more, I think you put it in a way like you get a lot more value on your time. What made you realize that and just how you think about that?
Absolutely. My first approach when I was trying to get a job, where I couldn't actually, because it was everything shut down, was actually a blessing in disguise. Because it made me realize, yeah, jobs are great. But you have to trade your money or your time for money, and it's exactly correlate. It's connected very closely, and there is no way for me to make a big amount of money one day without putting in a big amount of time, right? And being an entrepreneur, one, you get to get this feel, and you get to be really, you get to be within your business, and you get to understand every aspect. If I was an ice cream maker, I couldn't understand the marketing. I couldn't understand what clients really need, right? I'd just be serving. I'd have my task, I'd master it, but I would not be able to understand the entire business as a whole. As an entrepreneur, I'm able to understand every aspect of it and really maximize it, along with getting a big chunk of money that I couldn't have gotten if I was just if I was still having money correlated to time.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, I think like entrepreneurship gives you leverage, right? Like you can, it's kind of the idea of equity value that you get in being an entrepreneur versus just like the time value, as you hit upon, if you're just sort of getting paid by the hour. So it's really smart that you realize that so early, which is phenomenal. I want to shift gears maybe to entrepreneurs that you admire. Who's in that camp? I know we talked about some and they were sort of not the usual suspects, right? We tend to hear Elon Musk a lot, and then we hear, but both, maybe I'll call them macro kind of big time folks that maybe people name recognize. And then even, I don't know if there's folks who've just been from a YouTube perspective, folks that have, you've learned a lot from, like, yeah, who do you hold out as inspirational?
Absolutely. I've come across a few, and for example, the main one I've recently been super into is the Collison brothers. They founded Stripe, the payment processing company, and they were just two brothers, age 19, 17, just really interested in computers. They won some fairs, and they started to make a company at such a young age, and now it's something I use, right? I'm paying these Stripe processing fees, and that's going to them, right? So I think it's the everyday tool that I'm using, I'm relying on. Like my business could not have survived without these PayPal or Stripe. So I looked into their founding story, and it's just really inspiring because they were able to do it at such a young age. And as an 18-year-old, it just gives me that drive. So reading upon their story was super inspiring. Also recently, I came across Alexander Wang, the youngest billionaire who owns Scale AI. And that company basically sorts data for like machine learning and things like that. So reading that on the Forbes list was pretty shocking. And it kind of gave me that, okay, let's see if I can beat it. Let's see if I can match up to him and start my own thing and scale up to that big.
Okay.
No pun intended.
Yeah, no, that's cool. All right. So I think I saw on your Instagram or somewhere, I think the tagline or the headline was premature multibillionaire. So it sounds like that's definitely a goal for you. Is that remain a goal?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I That is one of my life slogans.
Okay. And what is it about becoming a billionaire that is so appealing? I mean, I guess I can gather some of it, but I'm just curious, like what grabbed you about that as a goal?
Yeah, I think the money part is a big thing, but also it unlocks so much freedom. So one, being in that billionaire club of that limited, it would just be such a cool accomplishment. And two, that money actually isn't, or like money, spending money, there's only such amount you can spend, right? But having that money gives you so much freedom, and that's one thing I really enjoy. So it gives me the opportunity to do whatever I want whenever I want and not be constrained, right? So, but it also gives the ability to amplify my ideas. So for example, if I were right now to donate to a homeless shelter, I would volunteer, of course, and donate X amount of money. Now, what if I multiplied that number by $1 million, right? How many more meals I could make? So I think it just amplifies the efforts that you want to do. And I think it's a great thing, especially going from zero to $1 billion and not inheriting a bunch of money or things like that, but actually making it yourself is, I think, one of the greatest feelings in the world.
Okay, cool. All right, so let's say we can get the two folks you mentioned, or I guess maybe the three folks, Alexander Wang, right? We get him in a room, you get an opportunity to chat with him. We won't tell him that you're coming after his record for being the youngest billionaire, so he actually wants to spend some time with you. What do you want to talk to him about? What advice would you want to seek out from him?
Yeah, I want to really pick apart his brain by first trying to understand what made him, or what are some turning points in his career that brought him, that he thinks really brought him to this stage. And I think if he was back in 18 years old, my age, what path he would choose? Would he pursue school full time? Would he drop out immediately? Would he change his pathway? Or I try and pick apart his brain and see if I can get any advice, especially coming from such a successful person. So yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, and then let's shift to the Collison brothers, and I actually want to ask you a little bit of a different question. You're a customer of Stripe, so if you, instead of them giving you advice, if you had to give them product feedback, right? Like something that would make your life easier to deliver websites to your customers, like what would you like to see in Stripe to make your life easier?
So my first instinct is to say lower the processing fees. However, I know that that's a source of revenue and I respect that. So yeah, I think it's really well made and well crafted. However, the integration or the learning curve to start using it was pretty challenging when I first started. And I wouldn't expect non-tech people with businesses to like immediately understand it. So I think actually PayPal has a better edge in the learning curve. So Stripe, I'm not a master in Stripe, but I would say somehow, if it was possible to maybe make the learning curve less steep, add some more easy to understand UI or tutorials, that'd be helpful.
All right. We'll clip that and send it to John and Patrick so they got some product feedback. Cool. Well, I know we're kind of wrapping up. You know, you're a senior. Give us a sense for, you're going to grow the business a ton. What's the plan for next year? Maybe that's still being sorted out, but give us a flavor for maybe where you think you're going to be next year, college, going full time on your business. What's that look like?
Yeah, right now I'm actually in a really great place that I'm happy to be in because it's senior second semester and I've gone in early admission from Stanford. So that's relieved my parents a lot. So now I have free terrain to really just really grow this business. So starting from now on all the way till very late fall, I will have no obligations and I will be able to really focus 100% on this business. So wherever I go, whether it's Stanford or another college, I'll definitely bring that business along with me. I will continue keeping that business, and maybe it'll become like a dorm business where it becomes a billion-dollar company like Mark Zuckerberg or something. But yeah, that's what I hope for. And I'm happy to have this time where I can really, really hone in, because before this, I had college apps, I had all these requirements, but now I'm off the hook and I have like a good 6-7 months of just pure focus.
Okay. Love it. A lot of it looks like, you know, you've taught yourself web design and like you used YouTube tutorials to learn stuff. I'm curious like what your perceptions of school are. Like what could be made better about school?
Yeah, I think I have mixed opinions about school. There's the pros and the cons. So I'll start off with the pros. The pros is for the average student, it's great for showing different types of fields, different types of interests, and finding your way in landing your eventual major in college and your eventual job. However, for me personally, since eighth grade summer, I knew my two major fields were going to be computer science and some sort of math, right? So I already knew coming into high school that those were my focuses, and I was correct. So unfortunately, high school does require you to take history, I do have to take English and all these other foreign language classes that weren't directly correlated to my passion. Although I found great friends in these classes and met people I wouldn't have met if I stayed in my computer science and math classes, I found that the majority of time in school has been sort of a letdown, because I'm really interested in computer science and I have a 50-minute chunk to really dive in to learn from a teacher. But then I have to move on and spend another 50-minute chunk in English where I'm not as passionate, and that takes away from the time where I could have put that in computer science. I could have learned two times as more that day rather than spending 50 minutes and 50 minutes in English and computer science. So I think there are definitely some drawbacks in the high school system specifically, because it's curated for the general audience and not so much of curating for each person's individual needs.
Okay, got it. So if somebody's hearing that, they're like, well, English is pretty important, right? And like, you know, and Winston's a budding entrepreneur, really successful, you know, English is going to be important in selling a vision to future teammates and selling a vision to future investors and customers. So is it just that maybe the English as you're learning it doesn't feel like it's applicable? Or, you know, like if English could be made to be more relevant to your situation, do you think then there's value in English? Or is it just like, now I'll learn English on my own?
Yeah, sorry, to clarify, English as a whole is a great tool and writing is a great tool. And I think I'll have to do that for all my project proposals, everything moving forward. However, the English I was specifying about was, for example, poetry or reading a Shakespeare, right? So those are concepts where it's not really applicable in my daily life. Yeah, I know that there are going to be some fanatics out there that are hating me for this, but that type of literature was specifically what I was talking about. And I think it does give a widened perspective of my view in reading and understanding words and understanding literature. But if my main focus is to make a tech startup, right, I'm not sure if Hamlet or Shakespeare will be part of that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I think this idea of like, when will I ever use this? Schools don't necessarily answer that question very well. And that's kind of what you're hitting upon. All right. So in a little bit of time, last question that I have for you is, you know, somebody's listening to this is like, hey, I want to be the next Winston. I want to build a business that's really successful in high school and then see where it goes. And they're a few years behind you. What's the sort of, you know, if there's a couple pieces of advice you'd give to them, what would you tell them?
Yeah, my main thing would be just do it. Just start. Just get your hands dirty. You will fail. You will misquote a big project like myself. You will not get customers. You won't get things in the beginning. But if you just start and keep pushing, you will definitely get success. If you keep trying, you will 100% get hit.
All right. Awesome, Winston. Well, congrats on what you built. Congrats on Stanford and whatever school is lucky enough to get you. And if you choose to go not to school and start something, I'm sure you'll be wildly successful there too. But yeah, this has been great. Actually, I forgot to ask you, Formidable Fellowship, your $1,000 grant, where did you decide to invest that in your business, or where did that go?
Yeah, that's going straight to how can I make it $10,000.
Okay. All right. Nice. Cool. All right, Winston. Well, great job. You're an inspiration. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you so much.